So just remember that you won't have a lot of room to move around. And
yes.
It's a good idea to not walk in front of the screen.
Yeah, but I will move a little bit,
right,
because I really, you will see, it requires a little bit of the animation
just,
and showing,
yeah,
and
just
something.
To remember,
yeah.
If you go in front of the screen, the light in Meekins really goes over your face.
Yes.
And there isn't much room behind.
Yes.
Behind the podium.
Right.
In Meekins.
It's yes.
A foot and a half.
Yes.
It's a
yes.
Very tight spot.
Yes. Yes. It's a shame because normally I'm very dynamic and I walk and talk and even demonstrate some of the movements when of this. And but we will do that as is. Is this? Yeah, maybe. Okay. So, shall I say something again?
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm recording now.
Okay.
So, we're...
We are starting now?
Ready to go, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for inviting me here. I'm really quite happy. I'm the first lady today, and this is the first lady in the pharmacology. So, at least I will have a privilege for one day to be the first lady. Thank you once again. Now, I would like to welcome you and listen to something. Welcome to the nano world. These little round blobs that you see here, these are my students from the nano lab, and they all want you to know that what they are doing will be probably for the future of the medicine, which is called nanomedicine. You see these little black dots over there? These are not nanoparticles which are very good. These are the nanoparticles which are being around us. And as you breathe now and as you listen to this beautiful music, what is really happening is that nanoparticles and particles which are in the air transmit these waves, and this is why you can hear the music. We will now go to the next part, which is to define what the nanoparticles actually are. And nanoparticles that we are going to focus on today are the ones which are made of polymers, which are on the upper part of the panel, and the ones which are made of metals, which are in the lower part of the panel. If you compare their sizes, you can see this is so-called nano size region between 10 nanometers and 100 nanometers. You have heard about different molecules, different drug molecules. They are all much smaller and they come below this size. And I'm pretty sure you all know about the erythrocytes, which are in our blood, or human hair. Some of us has beautiful, some of us has ugly, and mine is very, very thin one. And you know the cockroaches. So these three categories of the creatures have all much, much better, much, much larger sizes than the nanoparticles. Nanoparticles are everywhere around us. Nanomaterials are everywhere around us. And just for an illustration, I would like to show you that by the 2015, we are going to invest about $1 trillion in these kind of nanotechnological products. Some of them you are currently using, so it is here now, such as the skis or the vests. Particularly, if you watch 24, then you know that practically everybody has the bulletproof vest. These bulletproof vests are made of nanomaterials. And the reason for this, why it is made of nanomaterials, is because they have incredible capacity of repelling the high-speed bullets. So if you don't like this talk, you can shoot me, but be sure that you will not kill me because I have my bulletproof vest today. The inspiration for most of these nanoproducts came from nature. And as an example, I have given you here a flower, which is lotus flower. And lotus flower is a typical representative of the natural nanoproducts, but which has very, very many different nanoparticles on the surface. And this is the reason why these little flowers never really get rotten or wet, although they are in the water. If we go to the biosphere in the here in Montreal, we will see a big structure, which is certainly not a nanostructure, but this structure has been an inspiration for calling some of the components which are used for the nanostructures the fullerenes, because this structure was made by the famous architect Fuller. If today was a sunny day, you have certainly put some of your sunblock on the face, and many of these beautiful ladies here have makeups. These makeups and the sunscreens all contain nanoparticles. The component which was in many of these nanostructures was carbon. We are all made of a lot of carbon, but we are not nanotechnological products, we are natural products. And this carbon, which is produced, which is utilized for the nanostructures, has a very, very particular structure, as it is shown here, and it has a funny name. It is called buckyball, because this Fuller guy, who was the architect, as we said, his name was Fuller, and his first name was Buckminster. Everybody called him Bucky, and that's why buckyballs. We all love diamonds. Diamond is another form of the carbon, as you can see here, and it is structured in a very particular manner. And we all used graphite to write, but today nobody even knows what pencil is anymore. This type of a carbon is very, very unstructured, or has certainly very different structure from the buckyball. So what I would like to do today is to tell you how now some of these materials can be utilized in nanomedicine, and what is really nanomedicine. Also, what are the problems and challenges in nanomedicine? And I would like to give you two examples from the clinical trials where the nano products can be shown to be useful. And one of the very important things is that, in contrast to you asking me at the end the questions, I'm going to ask you the questions, because your opinion matters a lot. And as we know, the newspapers are full of nano, nano, nano. This is just a buzzword. There is a lot of hype, and there is a lot of opinions which are very negative. I would like to know, what do you think about it? So now let us see first, what is this nano? Nano stands for the word which is nanos, which means dwarf. And if you want to be more mathematical, then nano means 1 nanometer is 10 to the power of minus 9 meters. There are two people who are particularly important in this area of nano, who have introduced the concepts of nano. And this is the Ostwald and Feynman. Wolfgang Ostwald was a famous chemist, and he has written a book which is Welt der vernachlässigten Dimensionen in German, or World of Neglected Dimensions. This world of neglected dimensions is exactly this world that we have shown at the very beginning, which is the nano world. And he was referring actually to the colloid systems. Colloid system is the air. Colloid system is milk. Colloid system are egg yolks. So we are all familiar, but we just don't call them this way. The second person who is very important in introducing the concept of nano is Richard Feynman. I think everybody has heard about Richard Feynman, because he wrote the book, which is You Must Be Joking, Mr. Feynman. And this is a very, very funny book. But he is also brilliant. He was a brilliant physicist who got the Nobel Prize in 1965. And his famous paper written, which links the nano concept with his work as a physicist, is There is a Plenty of Room at the Bottom. And what he wanted really to tell us is that if we have very, very defined ways of putting atoms together and molecules together in a very directive manner, we will be able to create and control the creation of the structures which will be within this nanoscale. So what is the nanomedicine? Nanomedicine is utilization of these nanoscale products, and the ultimate goal is to treat or to prevent a human disease. Ultimately, certainly, whatever we create within the nanoscale should be for the benefit of the patient. What does this involve? Well, it involves monitoring or repair or construction or reconstruction of something which is broken, and definitely the nano devices which we are currently being constructing. If you look at the level of the nanoparticles which are currently used for mainly drug delivery systems, then they are very close to the viruses. And viruses are biological nanoparticles. These biological we have learned a great deal from these biological nanoparticles, and I will show you a couple of examples how the properties of these nanostructures can be utilized in cancer chemotherapy. Oops, I beg your pardon. So why do we want to use these nanoparticles, nano things? Well, as you have heard from the first lecture, there are thousands of compounds which have been synthesized, which are good drugs, and we really don't need another million of new drugs and lots of new synthetic compounds, which will then require 10 years to become a drug. We already have a lot of them, but with them comes also a problem. And what is the problem, or what are the problems, rather? First of all, most of the compounds, or many of the compounds which have been developed, which is practically one-third, they are very, very poorly water-soluble. And if one would like to inject them, then we have a problem, because you cannot inject something which cannot be dissolved in plasma. Second half of the drugs, they fail because they are injected, given, or orally taken, and then they distribute in the body in a bad way, so that they reach the wrong sites at the wrong time. If we utilize some of the nanoparticles, and here there are representative ones, then we can really direct much better this distribution in the body. And also, we can achieve with certain types of the nanoparticles their water solubility. One of the very characteristic features of the nanoparticles is there are enormous surface area. Why does it matter? Who cares about it? It matters because if we would like to deliver certain drugs, we would like to use the tiniest possible amount, where lots of molecules of this drug will be sent in a minimal volume. So the nanoparticles of this type, which are within 4 to 20 or 50 nanometer range, will do such a job. Just for an illustration, what does it mean to have a large surface? Just imagine you have 1 cubic centimeter of the drugs, and they are in the form of the nanoparticles. You can cover about 100 men, their surfaces, with this 1 gram of the nanoparticles, which normally, if this is the marble, of course, it is just one single marble. What do we want to achieve with nanomedicine? First of all, we would like to develop the tools which will allow early detection of the pathological event. And most importantly, we want to do this in a non-invasive manner. Second goal that we want to achieve is to have such nanoparticles which will allow us targeted therapy, not that it goes just everywhere, because drugs can do that by themselves. And finally, where we are currently standing and are being working very, very, very much, very intensively, is to develop and apply combination of the therapeutic agent and detection agent in one composition. And this is so-called theranostic, which is also a nano device. Now, let us see in a concrete example how, why, and where nanoparticles can be utilized. As we all know, we really have a big problem in cancer, cancer chemotherapy and cancer detection. Cancer incidence during the lifetime in the US is such that males, there is a one male in two which will get cancer. Among the females, it is one female in three during the lifetime which will get cancer. Among the types of cancers, prostate cancer and breast cancer are on the very top. Lung cancer is also very high. This is comparable to the situation in Canada, where again prostate cancer and breast cancer are also very high. Cancer mortality is very frequent. It is the second cause of death immediately after the heart diseases. But what I would like to point out to you is that we have another disease, which is a neurological disease, which is Alzheimer's disease, which is here at the bottom of the scale. And you will see in the follow-up that this disease, although it is relatively much less frequent, it is burdening both our society, our budget, our research, and our daily life almost more than the cancer. Current therapeutic approaches which are being used in the cancer therapy are such that we would like to eliminate fast-growing cancer cells, and at the same time, we would like to stimulate the natural defense systems, because in many cases, the cells which are dividing from our immune system are heavily affected by the anti-cancer agents, and they die. We would like to stimulate our system to prevent this. But to achieve these two goals, we have failed. We have failed miserably just with the drugs. And so what is the problem then? The problem is delivery of these drugs. Delivery, delivery, and delivery. And why was there a problem with the delivery? Because many drugs were poorly water-soluble, because many of these drugs were distributed inadequately in the tissue, and because of that, they have been producing a lot of toxicity. Very concrete example is here. Anti-cancer agent paclitaxel, which has been originally isolated from the Pacific yew tree, particularly from the bark, which is very rich on it, is very water insoluble. And therefore, the first application in the patients was by putting this compound into the material, which is a liquid, and called cremophore. This cremophore is a solubilizing agent, which has been utilized for minimum 10 years. The patients have to be strapped to the to bed, and the infusion is for many hours. It is very inconvenient, very impractical, very unattractive. But most seriously, it is these cremophore can produce the side effects. Many of them are immune reactions. In order to alleviate, in order to eliminate these side reactions, people came up with the idea that we can utilize some of the nano-delivery systems which will put this same kind of a compound in the little balls, little particles, which will not contain cremophore, but rather be made of the polymeric molecules. Polymeros means many members, and these polymers are usually the compounds which are made of something which is relatively easily degradable, digestible, so they are used only as vehicle, but then later on they can be relatively easily eliminated from the body without any serious side effects. And here is an example of this micelle, which I mentioned at the very beginning, which contains the drug molecules in the core, in the heart, and the molecules like to go there because they are lipophilic, and the core of this micelle is lipophilic, whereas this little hair that you see around, this is made of the polymer which is hydrophilic, thus it likes water, and it mixes very well with the blood, and therefore it can be easily distributed through the blood. But this is not the whole story. It goes further. Because if you have the nanoparticle, as we just said here, then these nanoparticles will be carried now through the blood vessel. And once they reach the site where there is a tumor, what will happen is that nanoparticles will go into the tumor relatively easily, because at these sites where we have the tumor, the blood vessels are rather leaky. So because of this leakiness, many nanoparticles will go into the tumor, but we do not get them out very easily because there is an ineffective lymphatic drainage at these sites where the tumor is. Therefore, many more nanoparticles stay here in the tumor site than they are in the blood and distributed to other tissues. And also, we can make them such that they have on the surface a kind of a compound which will make them stick even more to the individual cells. An example of such a nanoparticle which stays more in the tumor is paclitaxel, which has been made with the albumin, and we all have our albumin in the plasma, so it is not something incompatible. And because we did not target specific tumor cell type within the tumor, this kind of targeting, where it has been enhanced retention and permeability of the plasma membrane, so-called EPR effect, this is called passive targeting. In contrast to that, we have also made progress in this direction by putting the antibodies on the surface of the nanoparticles, and these kind of nanoparticles which have the antibodies can achieve active targeting because they can recognize the receptors, proteins, which are expressed at the particular types, tumor types. As you remember, in the second, third lecture, Vasilios has told us that people have begun to be screened for different types of the receptors, different types of molecules. Individualized therapy is supposed to be done. Well, in several years probably, we will have a better idea which of these people who have cancer express and have higher probability of responding to the certain therapeutics. And we will know now which are, for these particular people, antibodies which will be more suitable to be administered. For now, we have the commercially available and in clinical trials, Doxil, which is a liposomal doxorubicin, and a liposome, and we all know about liposomes. We put them, we use them every day when we are going to put our creams on the face and so on, which contain, these liposomes contain several compartments. The first one compartment is the one which is in the inner core, and therapeutic load, payload, drug, it is in this heart. Then you have this little layer around, which is the permeability barrier. And this permeability barrier can be tailored so that the drug can get out at the desired rate. And then finally, we have this little wiggly things, which is the polyethylene glycol surface modifier. And this makes it hydrosoluble, miscible with plasma. And then finally, we have this antibody. And I said these antibodies will be chosen according to the specific requirements of the type of the tumor upon the screening tests. But this is not all of the problem that we have in cancer. The problem, which is even more serious, is the problem of the tumor growth, which we cannot detect currently with using current techniques very early. As we can see here, what is illustrated is that we can detect, in most of the cases, tumors which are approximately 0.8 to 1 centimeter in diameter, which boils down to approximately 1 gram of the total tissue. This is already quite advanced stage, and what we would like to achieve is that we can move this advanced stages, detection of the advanced stages, into the much earlier time points. And we believe we will be able to achieve that with the some of the nanotechnological products which are used for the detection by utilizing, by employing so-called quantum dots. What are the quantum dots? As the name would tell you, quantum means something which jumps, is small, and dot is a dot. So because these particular materials are made of some semiconductor detectors, they emit the fluorescence in this quanta. And it was fascinated for the physicists were fascinated with them because they were blinking. So they would be sitting in front of the in front of the screen and watch those, how they blink. But we as pharmacologists and medical doctors were not fascinated with their blinking, but rather thought, how can we take the advantage of this? And one of the first experiments which was done utilizing the quantum dots is presented here in the experimental animal, where we can see this little blob. This poor animal has prostate cancer. And when we have when the animal was injected with the quantum dot, because of this passive targeting that we mentioned before, majority of the nanoparticles were accumulated in the site of the cancer, and it was possible to image it. The background, as you see, is green because we all fluoresce. And so the problem that has been solved between 2004, when this was first reported, and today is that new quantum dots have been synthesized, many of them. Particularly important ones are these ones, which are close to 10 nanometers. Why? Because these ones can fluoresce in the area beyond our fluorescence. So when the imaging is being done, we are invisible. There is no fluorescence from our hemoglobin, but what we can see is only these nanoparticles which are accumulated in the tissue. And in analogy, what we have seen with the previous type of nanoparticles, we can also put the targeting moieties at the surface and have it specifically delivered to a particular cell type in the cancer. Now, this is not enough to have one drug, which will go to the one place. And because of that, the people have tried another approach to combine it with the therapeutic agent, and this is gold. Everybody loves gold. Everybody used gold for centuries and centuries. And the gold has been fascinated us because of these wonderful colors. But people did not know then that they are dealing with the nanoparticles. These nanoparticles produce, gold nanoparticles, produce these wonderful colors because of the resonance, which is dependent very much on their size. And if I showed you a bottle which is red and has the gold nanoparticles, this will mean that there are very tiny nanoparticles inside. And as we go closer and closer to the blue, these become either a bigger nanoparticles or aggregates. So again, size is very important here, and we can tune it. And because we can tune that, we can utilize it for the drug delivery and, interestingly, for phototherapy. Why phototherapy? Because if we combine now nanoparticle which contains the drug on the surface and we have the gold in the as a core, what we can do is we can irradiate these gold nanoparticles which have incredible capacity to storage this energy, thermal energy, this light energy into the thermal, convert it into the thermal energy, and this literally cooks the cell. So if we have then the drug and cooking of the cancer cell, we can add the effectiveness of the drug. One drug is not enough, and obviously within the nanoparticles we can put now several of the drugs, and also the newest literature tells us that we can combine the gold nanoparticles, which can be either in the rod type or the spherical one, and the drug together. And on top of that, it could be also added a little bit of the iron. And these black little dots that you see here, these are iron nanoparticles which are put all together. This structure allows now not only the imaging which utilizes the light, but also magnetic resonance. So we are now in the position of combining the detection of the tumor by having magnetic resonance and also having the emission from the light and thermotherapy from the gold nanoparticle and also the drug by itself. Because as we know, it is never enough to have just one drug. There is not one drug, one target, one effect. Serious problems which we have met in the cancer therapy are equally so serious in other diseases which we are currently faced with and which was at the bottom of the scale in terms of the number of patients, but which is not definitely negligible. And here is an example. Today, Alzheimer's disease is really getting more and more prevalent, and there are some catastrophic numbers here that the incidence of Alzheimer's disease and related dementias in Canada in 2008 was really high, and it translates into one case as per 5 minutes. What is predicted is that in 2038, we will have one case in every 2 minutes. What is even more dramatic is when we look at the hours which are necessary to give to these people, to give the care, to care for them. In 2038, it is predicted that it will be more than 700 million hours which have to be dedicated to these people. If you like to see the economic burden of our country in 2038, it is staggering, because in 2008 it was $15 billion which had to be spent for that. In 2038 it will be over $150 billion. So we have to do something about it. Where we stand today is imaging the brain, and as you can see here, we can see by using currently available techniques very distinct changes in the brain. But these are very late changes. This is something where we can detect the disease where it's already too late. Most striking changes that you can detect here are so-called ventricles, which become very large, and at the surface of the brain, there are sulci and the gyruses, which become very deep. The most important areas which are being affected is the cortex and hippocampus, the areas which are important for the memory and language. So, as we said before, we do have the tools to detect Alzheimer's disease brain, changes in the Alzheimer's disease brain, by using positron emission tomography, which has been used very effectively by a Pittsburgh group, and that's why it is called Pittsburgh compound. But these changes are already quite advanced. What we are currently working on is to try to see very subtle changes which occur much earlier in our brain, where the brain starts degenerating. And this is at the tips of the nerves. If you imagine that our head is full of neurons, which we have about 100 billion of these entities, the problem does not start here. The problem starts at these tips. These tips make the contacts within each other, and when they make this contact, this allows the communication between one neuron and another neuron. At these tips, the contact places are at so-called spines. If you can imagine the rose, which has a lot of spines on top, this is something what we have at the tip of our neurons. And as you can see from here, When we are having healthy brain, these spines are, there are many of them, and they have a particular shapes, and they are categorized as mushroom, thin, and stubby. When these spines are exposed to the agents which are very deleterious and which have been discovered in Alzheimer's disease, namely amyloid beta, the spines regress, the connections between the neurons fade, and we have a serious problem. Nanotechnology could possibly help in this earlier detection of Alzheimer's disease and also therapeutic intervention. And as an example, I have shown you here, nanotechnological products, which are quantum dots, can track the nerves in a very nice and a discrete way. What also is currently in progress is development of the assays, which are extremely sensitive, because one of the main problems that we have currently is that we cannot detect from plasma or from cerebrospinal fluid the deleterious agents in very small volumes. So gold nanoparticles, again, have found utilization in development of so-called BBC or biobarcodes assays, where because of these unique properties of gold nanoparticles, we are capable of determining now very, very tiny amounts of the amyloid beta, which is deleterious and which damages our brains. Another application of the nanotechnology is by hitting these beta amyloids with the particles, nanoparticles, and promote their fibril formation, because the danger of the brain in the brain is not because these fibrils are formed. The danger starts much earlier, when soluble forms of this beta amyloid attack and go into the cell inside and kill the cell. If we can prevent it from getting into the cell and stay as fibrils, as depicted on the right-hand side, we can reduce the incidence of the cell killing. But our specific interest in our lab is not to focus so much on the neurons, because there is only about 10% of the neurons in our whole heads that we have. We have 90% of other cells. These other cells are astrocytes, microglia, oligodendrocytes. We are particularly interested in so-called microglia. And the reason why we are interested in microglia is because these are major housekeepers. They are surveying the environment. They are telling us if something is wrong. They get very mad and activated when there is an invader, be it a bacterium or something like that. And they communicate with the neuron and tell the neuron, look, this is bad. There is something coming. So by correcting the hyperactive microglia and putting them into the normal, healthy, steady state, the microglia can facilitate the survival of the neuron by producing so-called trophic factors, which will provide the neurons with the necessary signals, which will say, go on, live. Whereas when they are very, very mad and very actively too active, then they don't produce any trophic factors, but rather they produce toxins. They produce the compounds which produce the inflammation in the brain. And as a consequence of that, the signals will come to the neurons and say, get yourself killed, go away, get dead. How we can regulate the extent of the activation of this microglia is with nanoparticles, with the polymers which are called dendrimers. They look like trees. Again, inspiration from nature. And these trees are very important in terms of the size, because depending on the size, which we can very, very directly and very precisely tailor, we can achieve that they become either nanocontainers or that they can become very rigid structures. Obviously, for our purposes, for the drug delivery, it is this category between 4 and 7 nanometers which will optimally deliver the drugs. Not only that, we don't need any drugs in this case, because exactly this size, which is about 4 and 6 nanometers, these types of the dendrimers have anti-inflammatory effect. And this was quite fascinating. Not only that, but the fascinating another finding is that the toxicity in vitro and in vivo of these polymers is very, very low, and unless they become large, which is in this area here, they are well tolerated in the body. So where do we stand today and where we would like to go with our nano-delivery systems or with the therapeutic interventions in Alzheimer's disease? What we have today is the symptomatic drugs. This is the green line that we can see here. What do we notice? We notice that if we administer symptomatic drugs, these are mostly anti-cholinesterase inhibitors, because one of the major problems in the Alzheimer's disease is cholinergic system, which gets collapsed. So we help this system by symptomatic drugs, but these drugs can have only the effect for a very short time period, and then it disappears. What the goal is to develop disease-modifying drugs, and we can only do that when we understand the pathology of the disease, where in this case we don't see any kind of effect at the beginning, but there is a significant difference between the treated and untreated individuals in the long term. And this is where the importance lies, because as this goes further and further, these two lines diverge more and more. And as we also know, is that it is not enough just to hit the brain with a big quantity, be it of polymers or the drugs. We need to go intracellularly into the specific site of the cell, because the pathology of the disease, of the Alzheimer's disease and as well of the cancer disease, rests in a particular part of the cell. And if you can imagine the cell which we are full of as a little factory, then the most important things, the most important decisions which are being made are made in the main office. Or if you'd like to make an analogy with the home, this is the kitchen, because most important decisions are usually made in the kitchen. Then the other organelle which is very important in the cell is mitochondria. According to some studies, the Alzheimer's disease is actually mitochondrial disease, and the mitochondria in the neurons and in the glial cells are impaired. In order to save those, we need to have the targeting system, which we are beginning to have, which will go directly to mitochondria and not to other sites. What is also emerging as a pattern is that diabetes type 2, which is associated with metabolic syndrome and obesity, is often linked with the Alzheimer's disease. And in all of these diseases, one of the organelles which seem to play a very important role are lipid droplets. Lipid droplets were considered for years and years as something which is serving just as a storage facility. However, today what we know, this is not just for storing the fat. These little entities have many more functions, which include the transport of different proteins within the cell, which include also the collecting the garbage on them temporarily, and then shipping them into the waste facility or in so-called lysosomes. And lysosomes are the organelles which will destroy these unnecessary components in the cell. So in summary, what we have seen so far, we've seen that nanoparticles can contribute to solubilization and reduction of the toxicity of anti-cancer drugs. What we have seen in the area of neurological disorders, that the nanodiagnostic tools can provide us with some earlier diagnosis because they are very, very sensitive and can detect the amounts of the compounds in our cerebrospinal fluid, which normally is not possible to detect. And what we are aiming at is to develop so-called all-in-one theragnostic tool where we will have with the nanoparticle both diagnostic and therapeutic intervention. So where do we stand today if we ask ourselves with the nanomedicine? Well, we stay today somewhere around here. We have gone through the passive targeting. We have achieved some of the active targeting. And now we are here where we are designing different nanoparticles with the emerging functions. And these emerging functions are the ones which we are discovering from the molecular screening and personalized medicine. What will come after is probably these little nanomachines that people have talked about, but we are really quite far away from there. And I believe personally that nanomedicine has a bright future, and it has a bright future, but only if we are working together, because there was too much of a time spent where chemists were working in their little boxes, pharmacologists in their little boxes, medical doctors in their little boxes, but only working together will bring us a success in the end. And I would like to thank you and remind ourselves on the big and important fact that all what we have learned about nanoparticles comes actually from nature, which is around us. And we should cherish nature, and we should really get inspired more and more from it and take into account that nanoparticles that we are going to produce should not be dangerous and harming our environment, but rather that we should work with them and help our environment to be preserved. Thank you. That's all.